Oh, such a good question.
Well, when you come with these questions, that's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
And welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. This is Ben Baker. I am excited to have you guys all with me for another week. I have this incredible audience that listens to me every week. You subscribe to my podcast on Spotify, on iHeart, on iTunes. I love you all and thank you all for the comments you all give me. Anybody that wants to sit there and send me a note at ben@yourbrandmarketing.com, I want to hear what you guys have to say. So thank you very much for being an awesome audience. So this week, we're going to talk about marketing. I've got Steve Watt coming to me from Toronto, and he and I were just talking off air. We're brothers of another mother. You know, I talk brand strategy, he talks marketing. And you know what? There is such an incredible amount to unpack in what's going on in the marketing world today that I had to bring Steve on so we can have this conversation. So Steve, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Ben. I am excited to be here. And yeah, I felt immediately as we started talking that we could probably go all day. So I guess now our job is to dial this into something useful for the listeners in some reasonable time frame.
Well, I've got the timer on for 35 minutes. There's no guarantee we're going to keep it to 35. But you know what? If I don't put the timer on, you and I are going to be 2 hours into this conversation and we'll be sitting there going, oh, I guess we better wrap this up. So let's start this off. Now, you call yourself a fractional CMO, you know, a fractional chief marketing officer. And I love that. So take me back to where you came from, where you are today, and where are you going with this? Because you know, the world has changed, marketing has changed, it's changing, and the needs of different companies are changing. So what brought you to where you are today?
Yeah, the gig economy, not just for Uber drivers anymore. Who says leaders can't participate in that model as well? And I think there's a bit of a long-term established concept of the fractional CFO. A lot of startups and scale-ups need real financial leadership at particular times when they're raising funds and at year end and when they're involved in mergers or acquisitions. And they need a CFO. They need someone who brings that kind of real expertise. But they neither need nor can afford an experienced CFO all year round. So fractional CFOs fill that market need by working with a variety of smaller companies. And I think that that way of thinking and way of operating is starting to spread into some other areas. And marketing is one of those. So a good friend, a mentor of mine has been on this road for 4 or 5 years. And it's been working really well for him and working really well for his clients. So a couple of years ago, I found myself between jobs, as one often does in a lot of fields, and I think even more so in marketing, and even more so in tech marketing where I play. It's rough out there. Companies come and go, jobs come and go, strategies come and go, and it's a lot of rocky waters. And I was really reflecting on some great experiences I had had working with some amazing people in amazing organizations, and some experiences I'd had that had gone the other way. And I thought, you know what? I think I need to be more purposeful in choosing what I do, where I do it, and who I do it with. And what better way to take ownership of that than not go look for another job, but instead really establish myself as a successful and knowledgeable person within a particular niche that delivers a particular sort of value that particular sorts of companies at particular stages would really need, and then be able to be a little more choosy as to who I work with and in what way, and work with two or three different companies at once. couple days a week here, a couple days a week there, maybe flex it up and flex it down based on their needs and on my needs. And perhaps the hypothesis was this would be an amazing thing for me and for the organizations that I've been working with. And thus far, a little over 2 years in, it's going really well.
You know, and that's interesting because we had Paul Rigel from the CFO Center on this show, I don't know, sometime last year. I can't remember exactly when it was, but that's exactly what they do. They're part-time CFO type work. And it makes so much sense in today's economy because you're right. You know, how many companies that are $5 million, $10 million, even $20 million can afford a full-time chief marketing officer, chief financial officer at $250,000 plus, and then all of a sudden, 2 years down the road, realize, well, we got the wrong person. We got to get rid of this person. We got to, you know, do a transition all over again. Where having somebody on part-time not only is probably more beneficial cost-wise, but it allows you to have that flexibility, you know, both as an organization and also as the CFO or the CMO, to be able to sit there and say, look, if it's not working, you know, let's help you transition through this without all the ugliness that goes through it.
Absolutely. If you find the right dance partners, it's truly a win-win, or I would even say win-win-win. It's a win for the individual, for the fractional leader. It's a win for the company, the CEO, the ownership, what have you. It's also a win for the team within that organization, the marketing team in this case, who gets to level up their game by working with someone who brings in some outside perspective and expertise, but who isn't there all the time. So there's also real opportunity for them to level up and lead and perhaps lead in new ways. So if you choose your partners right, which doesn't always happen, but if you do, it's a really mutually beneficial environment. And as you said, it mitigates risk all over the place. You know, I kind of jokingly say to CEOs when I talk to them, look, I'll come in, we'll do this thing. If at some point you're not loving it anymore or you want to go in a different direction, well, just stop paying me and I'll stop showing up. You know, no harm, no foul, right? You're not in a legal obligation, a moral obligation, a PR optics obligation. We can go in different ways without hurting feelings and burning bridges. So it takes a lot of trust on all sides to have that work well, but I am definitely finding that it absolutely can, and I know others are as well.
Well, and not only that, but if you are a cyclical business and all of a sudden you have 2 months where things, you know, there's operational stuff that needs to be done, but the, you know, the high level stuff can go on hiatus, say over a summer, because, you know, the strategy's already been done. Now it just needs to be, you know, the tactics need to be built. You don't need to have that person. You can go on holidays for 8 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever, come back. They don't have to pay you for those 6 or 8 weeks. So there's a lot of benefits to do that as well. But I want to talk to you about leveling up the team, because I think that that's a word that you use. And I think that that is an amazing thought process as an outside leader coming in to be able to level up that team, because you have a lot of people that come in and say, oh my God, we've got this part-time consultant that's coming in to, you know, to manage us as a team, but it's not managing, it's leading. And it's giving them the tools to become better leaders. And I want to talk to you about that. So when you come into an organization and there is already a team in place and they're gelled and they're, you know, they're working well together, how do you build that trust with that team? And how do you give them the tools to realize, hey, listen, I'm here to help make you better, and I'm here to help, you know, create the opportunities and be the advocate for this department to the larger organization? Because that's tough being, you know, the pro from Dover just parachuting in at times. So how do you go about doing that?
I think firstly is really coming in with a lot of empathy, really coming in with a true understanding that, as you said, this could be awkward. This could be difficult. Is this person being brought in because senior leadership doesn't have faith in us? Or is this person being brought in because senior leadership has a lot of faith in us and wants us to level up and wants to help us achieve greater things? Recognizing that there are different personalities and different career aspirations going on here, and that it can be difficult. And just being really empathetic, transparent, honest, and investing in those relationships. I hate the consultant word because that implies kind of like dropping a PowerPoint deck that explains why you people are doing everything wrong and then heading to the airport.
Here's an 82 slide deck. You know, once we get through that, we'll start talking. I hate that.
Exactly. And it probably has no empathy for existing experience or existing personalities. Look, here's a framework. Here's a playbook, and you're all doing it wrong unless you do this. Okay, I got a flight to catch. Bye. And that would be a disaster. And I never, ever would want to be that guy. I've had the great pleasure and benefit of working with some amazing marketers over the years. And they're not all at senior levels. I've worked with many amazing marketers who are much more junior. And I've learned a lot from them. Sometimes I've learned technical things from them. I've learned aspects of the customer from them. I've learned ways that they work together. I've learned so much. So I truly believe that you can learn a lot from everyone. And so when I go in, I invest a lot in those relationships with the marketing team and really trying to be a sponge to understand where they're at today, where they've come from, what's going well from their perspective, what's not going well, maybe what they know needs to happen, but they just don't have the budget or the bandwidth to do, and really demonstrating authentically to them that I am a part of their team. I am not here to tell them they're doing everything wrong because they might be doing a whole lot of things right. In fact, I hope they are doing a whole lot of things right because then we can all succeed together better. So a lot of empathy, a lot of investing in those relationships, asking a lot of questions before I start saying, okay, here's the things I want to change. And then really treating them as partners throughout the whole process. I think the critical relationships for anyone doing what I'm doing, obviously there's a critical up relationship with the CEO. There are critical parallel relationships with the head of sales and head of product, customer success and other things. And then there are the critical relationships of the marketing team. And you're going to fail if you get any of them wrong. And I think probably sometimes people underestimate the importance of gelling with that team.
Yeah. And the underlying word that I'm hearing without hearing it is trust. And there's trust in all sorts of things. There's trust with the CEO, there's trust with the C-suite, there's trust with the people that you're particularly working for, the parallel relationships with sales, with operations, with whatever. And that trust is something that takes a lot of effort and a lot of communication and a lot of actually standing there and doing the job. You know, so it's, my question to you is, when you first walk into an organization, or even before you walk into a organization, where is your first levels of communication? Where's your first questions that you're asking to make sure that it's a right fit? Because taking on employment, whether it's part-time employment or going to work for somebody or whatever, it's got to be a two-way street. There's got to be an understanding both ways. A lot of people, especially a lot of junior people, look at it and says, well, I'm applying for a job, you know, and it's up to them to ask the questions, up to me to answer the questions. And I never think that that's true. I think we all need to sit there and say it's a relationship when you're going into any of these type of situations. So how do you start that relationship? Because how you start will determine its success long term.
Absolutely. I think oftentimes people will intellectually agree that it ought to be a two-way street and that the job seeker is interviewing the company just as much as the company is interviewing the job seeker, and everyone nods their heads and makes it sense. Yeah, sounds right. If you're unemployed and you've got bills to pay, it's like, I want this job. And all of a sudden you're selling yourself now and you're not having a honest two-way conversation. You are selling yourself in hopes of landing a role. And sometimes success in that is not a good thing because you sell yourself into the wrong role and it's a bad match, and you know, it's bad for everyone. So one thing that I love, one of many things I love about this fractional model, is I never need the job per se. I'm never without income. the new client, the new opportunity is something that may be beneficial for me and for them. It may add some extra income and some extra experience and some extra fun and problem solving for me. Wonderful. I'm excited about that, but I don't need the job per se because I've got one or two other things going as well. And just the different mindset that I'm not selling. I have a lot of phone calls, coffees, lunches with CEOs and other senior leaders of firms, and I'm never selling myself to them. I am really honestly sharing what I know and asking a ton of questions of them. And if they then invite me in, great. Well, let's talk about how we could structure that to our mutual advantage. But the fact that I'm not selling myself, I'm not job seeking, just creates an entirely different frame of mind for me and for the other person, and therefore an entirely different conversation. So how, more specifically, I write a lot, I speak a lot, I will take a phone call, or if I can work it out logistically, a coffee meeting with pretty much any CEO who wants to reach out. And I'm not there to pitch. I will ask them a lot about what's going on in their business, what's working, what isn't working, what's next, the strength of their product, of their strategy, of their finances, of their team, and on and on and on. And I will really honestly answer all of their questions about what I think might be impactful for them and strategic things and executional things. And I don't hold back. And it's funny. Sometimes people will say, well, aren't you just giving away all your secret sauce or whatever for free? Anyone who would think that over the course of a 90-minute coffee conversation, they could get everything that is of, well, then I must not have very much value to give if it can all go in 60 or 90 minutes. Like, honestly, there's more there. I write a lot of things. I podcast a lot. And I just try to really share everything that I know. And that probably causes a lot of companies and CEOs to lean away from me because it's not a fit for what they need. And that's fine. Let's not waste their time or my time. But some portion of them lean in. And now we've got the beginnings of a potentially a mutually beneficial relationship.
But that's understanding who your customer is. And I think through that entire conversation, you've really nailed it down to say, there are people that are going to be my clients, and there are going to be people that aren't going to be my clients. And investing the time and the energy in a cup of coffee, in a telephone call, in a Zoom conversation, to, you know, podcast this and that thing, allows people to determine, wait a second, you know, is Steve the right person for me or is he not? Because as you said, you're not selling. What you're doing is you're adding value. And there's some real important things for people to listen to for that, to be able to sit there and say, you're right. Nobody's going to get all your information out of you in 90 minutes. It's impossible. Nobody can get all the information out of me. They can't get the information out of everybody. But the more we can share, the more we can add value, the more we can build a relationship on trust. So my question is, when we start looking at the next step, how do we take a look at this and say, how do we move things to a point where we can be the person that people believe in? You know, what is that thing? What's that tipping point? What makes people think that that tipping point is there and its ability to do this? And the thought process that I came into with this is that it's really important for people to understand to stay in their lane, to understand what they're good at, what they're not good at, who their client is, who their client isn't, you know, how they add value, and what are the important things? Because I'm sure, like me, you know, we only do work with business to business type companies. You know, business to business, there's business to business, there's business to consumer, there's government clients. I've worked a lot with government clients. I don't tend to work a lot with government anymore. When you're going in, when you're sitting there going, okay, we're going to give a CEO 90 minutes of my time, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to have a conversation, I'm going to add value. What are the things that you're listening for? They're going to sit there and say, ah, this is the right conversation. This is going the right way. This is the type of person I can help, because obviously there are people you believe you can help and there's people you don't believe you can help. So that's pretty much my question is where, you know, what are you listening for to know that it's time to start taking that conversation to the next level?
I think half of that happens even before the conversation starts. And that is the origin of that conversation. Usually the conversation originates because the CEO has read something that I've written, has seen me speak somewhere, has listened to my podcast, either the VP Marketing Show, which is my own podcast, or Flip My Funnel, where I'm a recurring guest host, or they have been talking to a friend or a colleague who knows me through one of these things or something else. And there's kind of a sense of, well, Steve's a guy who kind of does this kind of thing. And if they're leaning in so far as they want to have that coffee or that conversation, well, they're probably, you know, we're kind of halfway to a meeting of the minds already because others just wouldn't be the right kind of person for them to spend their time with. So kind of halfway there already. When we're actually having the conversations, I guess, I mean, I don't have a system. It's not like a sales rep doing a discovery process. It's really a authentic conversation. But I think what I'm listening for, if not explicitly, but implicitly, what I'm listening for is honesty and openness about their business. I ask a lot of questions. And if someone's going to just gloss over every wart and wrinkle in their business and tell me how amazing everything is, I'm not getting a good vibe. If someone's really super guarded about wanting to share any information, I don't feel that there's the foundations of trust here. I mean, I absolutely, in some cases where things have progressed, I'm very happy to sign an NDA and, you know, absolutely. But I mean, if you need to sign an NDA to have a coffee, then I think there's a problem.
That's an expensive cup of coffee.
Yeah. So that honesty and integrity and ability to really engage themselves in an honest conversation about where their business is at, I love that. I think an appreciation for marketing. There are some CEOs who absolutely have no appreciation or understanding of marketing. Some think that marketing is an outdated concept of slapping logos on water bottles and making brochures and hosting parties. Some think marketing is digital demand gen and nothing else. It's SEO, SEM, it's how many leads. You know, brand building is much more than those superficial things. Demand generation is much more than generating leads. Their marketing is such a powerful and multifaceted animal that can take shape in so many different ways and contribute to businesses in so many different ways, depending on the balance of the needs of the business and the capabilities of the individual. And I find that sometimes in speaking with a CEO, it's immediately apparent that they get that. And we have a meeting of minds around all the things that could be done. And how do you prioritize? And how do you balance near-term revenue generation with longer-term brand building and category building? And how do you work marketing and sales and product and other things together? And when there's this meeting of the minds, like, yeah, they really get that this is complicated stuff, then I get a real warm feeling, as opposed to someone who kind of three times in 5 minutes essentially asks, how many leads can you generate with no budget? Which is kind of what it boils down to in some cases. So I think that's how I think about it. And it just really, it happens organically. Sometimes after or midway through a coffee or a lunch, we're really leaning into each other. And it's just a natural progression of the conversation of like, okay, how do we go to the next step together? And other times it's just kind of like, hey, it's been a pleasure meeting you. Thanks for your time. Wishing you all the best. And off we go. And that's not a loss from my perspective. I've met someone new. I've guaranteed learned something from them. I hope they've learned something from me. And who knows where our paths may cross in the future. But when it does lead to something more, it's coming from a really honest place on both sides.
Yeah. And it's getting people to understand what marketing truly is. And you're right. Some people get it and some people absolutely don't. Some people just look at marketing as a cost center. You know, how much is it going to cost me? And some people actually take a look at it, sit there and say, okay, there is true ROI for branding and for marketing and advertising and communication. And some of it is short-term gain and some of it is long-term gain. And people that are visionary, I'm sure, you know, because those are the people I want to work with. I want to work with people that understand there's short-term needs, but there's also long-term vision. And if you can't understand that both are important, both not only to the marketing department, but to the company as a whole, you know, there really isn't a basis of communication. And I think that that's important. And the other thing you talked about was, you know, building the relationship with the various departments and with sales and getting sales, the sales buy-in as well. Because the one thing I notice in most organizations is the animosity, mistrust, and misunderstanding between marketing and sales. You know, they have different objectives. They're compensated differently. They're spoken to differently within the organization. They're given different levels of trust within the organization. So how do you go about breaking down that barrier and that wall? I mean, for me, it's all about communication, but I want to hear it from you.
The way I look at it is that it all starts with objectives. And what I mean by that is that I think oftentimes a mistake is made by thinking that it all starts with the metrics. And therefore, everything needs to drive particular metrics. But if you don't take that additional step back and say, well, why are these our metrics? What objectives do these metrics serve? Then you can end up spending a whole lot of time and effort and money in pursuit of false goals. So what I mean is every business is in a different place, right? Sometimes it's a startup, sometimes it's a larger firm. Sometimes it is in a evangelical sales motion where they need to change the way people think about the world. They're essentially selling something that you don't know you need. You don't know it exists. They need to change your understanding of the world before you'll buy it. In other cases, it's kind of a Coke versus Pepsi kind of thing. Like, hey, stop drinking Coke, drink my Pepsi instead. Well, that's a completely different situation. Sometimes you're up against an 800-pound gorilla competitor. Sometimes you're going into a incredibly fragmented marketplace. Sometimes you're venture funded and the expectations for you to grow extremely quickly are overwhelmingly strong. Sometimes you're bootstrapped and very different growth trajectory is appropriate. There are those and so many more. There are so many things, and I always seek to uncover all of that first, and then really think about objectives. And I'll sometimes say to a CEO, look, if you had a magic wand and you could wave it and make something happen, but you could only wave it once, what would that thing be? You know, is it more new customers? Is it expanding our business with our existing customers? Is it changing the perception of the marketplace and getting them to recognize that we're no longer about A, we're now about B? What would you do with that magic wand? And that leads to a lot of really interesting conversations. And once you really get clarity on the objectives, well, then you can start to say, do the metrics and the incentive systems here support or work at cross purposes to that? And it's amazing how often they work at cross purposes. It's like, you know, really what we're trying to do is build long-term enterprise value by establishing an entirely new category and building a compelling brand that alters the way this piece of the market works. And yet our metrics are MQLs, SQLs, and demos this month. Wow. So you've got really transactional short-term metrics, yet ultimately you're trying to pursue an entirely different thing. Well, you're incentivizing both implicitly and explicitly. You're incentivizing people to do things that are not in your own best interests. Explicitly, because their pay depends on hitting certain numbers, you know, perhaps generating hundreds of marketing qualified leads. And then they probably define that as loosely as they possibly can. You know, anyone who downloaded one little piece of content, oh, there's an MQL, look at me. And then now you're phoning them, you're doing all these kinds of things. Okay, you're incentivizing people both in terms of their paycheck and whether they're going to get promoted or fired based on one set of activities when that really isn't what you ultimately need. So long answer, but I think you have to start with real objectives. From the objectives, you get the metrics. And only then can you start thinking about, well, what are the tactics and tools and activities that are going to drive those metrics in pursuit of those objectives?
Yeah, and then communicating throughout the organization, what are we truly trying to achieve? You know, and you're right, because the metrics, you and I have both seen it, where you look at the metrics that are there and you sit there going, well, that might work well for IBM or that might work well for Coca-Cola, but why are we even measuring this? Like, why do we even care about this? Or why is it part of the incentive program or whatever? Because, well, so-and-so company, you know, that's what they use as a metric. I'm like, but they're not us. You know, and that's the problem, is too many organizations are not building their metrics, their goals, their, you know, their communication based on what's important to them. They're doing it based on industries, these supposed industry standards. And I think that organizations need to start looking at themselves as individuals and what they need and what they're trying to achieve, rather than trying to put, you know, a yardstick up against, you know, the industry standard, which is artificial anyway.
Absolutely. And a recognition of the vast difference between a high velocity transactional sale versus a long, complex enterprise sale. They're dramatically different. And if you are in a high velocity selling motion where you can close relatively simple deals in a couple of phone calls, maybe an online demo, well, then yeah, you need a whole lot of qualified leads. Of course you do. And that is going to lead to a particular set of structures and activities, who you hire, what tools you use, how you budget, what you measure, what you reward, all of those things in support of that. And that is dramatically different from another organization that maybe has a year-long sale, a 7 or 8 figure sale with multiple stakeholders, and they've got to engage across different buying units, across different geographies, different levels of the organization, procurement, legal, IT, all these areas. Well, that's entirely different. That what works in the one will fall flat on its face in the other. And it's so obvious, and no one would disagree with what I just said. But when they start putting it into concrete action about how they structure their teams, what metrics they pursue, how they incentivize their people, they sometimes lose sight of that and they start incentivizing the wrong things. And then, no surprise, things aren't going well.
That's crazy. I mean, I just think of things like, you know, a Boeing or an IBM, you know, and trying to, you know, incentivize those people based on short-term, you know, goals. It doesn't work. I mean, how long does it take to sell a 787? It's probably take years.
Yeah. Or take it further. Let's start incentivizing Boeing production guys based, you know, let's pay them per screw that they tighten, you know. They'll tighten a whole lot of screws, won't they? And they'll miss a few along the way and we'll have disastrous consequences. I think that they better be incentivizing people for 100% quality above all, right? So again, what are your objectives? And from that, what are the metrics that support those objectives? And then everything else lines up underneath that.
Perfect. Now, I'm going to ask you two quick questions, you know, then let you go, because this conversation, as I said, could go forever, but we're getting to that point in time. The number one thing is, how do people get in touch with you? What's the best way to get people to get in touch with you?
Right. So a couple of things. LinkedIn is my primary social channel. I spend a lot of time on LinkedIn, both sharing my own content and engaging, but also learning. I have so much respect for so many of the amazing people that I engage with on LinkedIn. It's my window to the world. I don't start out by heading to the homepage of business publications or anything. I end up there because someone in my network shared something from HBR or from wherever. And so, you know, LinkedIn is my homepage. So Steve Watt, W-A-T-T, and there's probably a few others with my name. but I'm the guy who bills himself as a fractional marketing leader.
We'll make sure that that's up in the show notes so people can get in touch with you there.
So that's one of my things. And I do most of my writing there, both short form and long form content. And I'm very happy to engage with people there. Podcasting, like yourself, although I'm much more junior in the podcasting world than you are, but I launched the VP Marketing Show recently, and that's been a really honest effort on my part to learn more from my peers and solve some things. I had a lot of questions that I was dealing with some of the clients I've been working with around how best to structure a marketing team and metrics and operations of a marketing team. You know, do we go agile or do we use quarterly OKRs? Do we do annual plans? You know, so I thought, well, why not just set out and interview a bunch of marketing leaders about how they run their teams and how they do things? And why not make it a podcast instead of just a one-on-one conversation? Then perhaps others can benefit and learn along with me. And that's been great. And I'm expanding the aperture there a little bit of what that show is. It was quite literally the first episodes were everyone was a VP marketing and those were the questions I asked them. And there comes a point of diminishing returns where it's like, okay, it's starting to sound the same. So I've been really broadening that and having some really interesting conversations with folks about what's wrong with modern marketing or today's marketing, what's next for modern marketing. I had a recent conversation with a executive recruiter who for almost 30 years has focused on leadership roles within tech firms. I'm starting to interview tech sales leaders now, what works for them in terms of that relationship between sales and marketing. So the VP Marketing Show, I would urge anyone who finds the sorts of stuff we're talking about today to be interesting or valuable to them, they may want to check that out as well.
Perfect. I'll get you to send me the link so we can get that onto the show notes as well. And the last question I ask people, when you leave a meeting, when you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
I think I want people to say, that is a passionate, curious person with who cares a whole lot, who knows a bunch of stuff, but also has a real appreciation for all that he doesn't know, and is a lifetime learner, lifelong learner, and someone who I could feel really good about calling a friend, calling a peer, calling a part of our organization in some capacity. I would never try to position myself as someone who has it all figured out, but I think that if you approach things with a true intellectual curiosity and a passion to always learn and always get better, that good things almost always happen. So I think if I left that impression, I'd be really happy. Interesting question. I don't think I've ever been asked that question before.
There we go. It's probably my favorite question. And it actually gives me the great insight into people's soul. So I love asking that question. Steve, thank you for being a phenomenal guest, for adding some real insight and talking about a subject that we don't talk about a lot. So, you know, it's just, it adds value to my audience and I really appreciate it. So thanks for being.
Thank you for having me on, Ben. I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. It's an absolute pleasure to speak with you. And I look forward to continuing our relationship because I think we are fellow travelers on this road to building great companies and building great careers. And I've thoroughly enjoyed this. Thank you.
This has been the Your Living Brand Live Show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at yourlivingbrand.com and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level, contact us for a free 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you for listening and sharing. And tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?